Is artificial intelligence taking over the world? ChatGPT took just 5 days to get 1 million users, while Microsoft and Google spend billions going toe-to-toe in the search wars. Welcome to I See Your Trade. I'm your host, Pamela Ambler. Soon we'll be joined by our special guest, Dan Hookham, Global VP Innovation from NRI's Valrata Business. Then later, our resident expert, Oxford Economics economist Alex Holmes, will explain how the world has been transformed forever by AI technology. I See Your Trade is brought to you by IC Markets, a leading high-performance trading provider. Trade up to IC Markets. Let's dive right in. And for anyone listening that can't see the charts, we will talk you through the data. Now, Dan, let's start with the adoption rate of ChatGPT. There has been nothing like this in history. What's driving demand in such a significant way?
The outcomes are truly staggering, Pamela. But we've seen that initial adoption being really driven by a combination of interest in AI, and an ability to trial, an ability to use your own language skills to just get in there and give it a go, no AI skills required. I don't think anybody could deny that there was a bit of a hype cycle from the media around this, but the really interesting part about this has very much been that if you think about how you would typically use the internet and the time you would spend searching for an answer, ChatGPT has brought that time down to a tenth of the same time. And that interest in using those tools coupled with the value they get from it is just unparalleled at the moment.
So let's go to the next chart here. And it took ChatGPT just 2 months to get to 100 million users. Again, the fastest adoption rate in history. Interestingly, it achieved this without being available in China or in Russia. Now, how does this growth rate compare to the likes of Chinese-owned TikTok?
Yeah, this is a very interesting question, isn't it? But if we think about the purpose for TikTok, that's very much around entertainment, right? And that's how YouTube started, with an entertainment lens, and then we moved into a bit more around how can it help me do things, increase my knowledge. Whereas ChatGPT fit right into that sweet spot of how people use the internet to search, but it just allows you to do it so much quicker. So that adoption curve has just been quite incredible, because the value it brings to people, the time it saves them, and the ease of access has just multiplied their productivity, whether you're a housewife or somebody running their own business.
Dan, certainly everything started to heat up when Microsoft made a $10 billion bid for ChatGPT's parent company, OpenAI. How much is this about Microsoft taking on Google for search?
Yeah, and again, this is a really interesting topic, Pamela. So when we think about Google and we think about Microsoft, the ways that they make money are different. If you're Microsoft and you can have 1.5 billion people on the planet using Windows and 1.3 billion of them using Microsoft Office, if you're able to insert those AI tools into those products and therefore their need to go elsewhere to search disappears, that's a very, very powerful tool for keeping you in that product set. And then when you compare that to Google, whereby a primary part of their business is advertising through search. It's a very, very different business model, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's a search challenge, as in who has the best search algorithm, but it's the accessibility of search and the availability, so you can use that information in a much more useful way. I'm not sure that Google's necessarily worried that people are going to switch out of using Google. That's a pretty firm footprint, and if you ever talk to people who are comparing one to the other from a search perspective, people tend to have a very staunch view about the one that they prefer, almost a religious view. So I'm not sure that's the major concern.
And clearly this technology that we've been talking about is transforming the world in ways that are only just becoming apparent. What would you say is the size of the prize?
Oh, the size is enormous. If you looked at the market value, the value in 2030, I think, is $1.5 trillion. But that's only just touching the edges of that particular problem. Organizations have been chasing AI for near on 60 years now, with everybody trying to get a foot ahead. And if you think about it, it becomes very reasonable as to why. If you're able to do something three times faster than your competitor, or make it much more accessible than your competitor can, then you're going to win that particular market.
And industry-wise, which ones are primed to experience growth from AI, and where is the revenue being generated?
Yeah, so AI, of course, is is being able to do things faster, quicker, and on a greater scale. It's an optimization tool beyond our wildest dreams. Again, this is good and bad. But we know that AI, like we've talked about, is used heavily in financial services. That's where the biggest revenue is made. But people like pharmaceuticals, biomedical companies, robotics companies, they're using AI to accelerate a lot of the manufacturing processes, the big data crunching, the ability to sequence genomes has decreased in such a way that we've gone from weeks to down to hours. These things are helping people do things quicker and faster, which allows them to come to market faster and to adjust faster.
Thank you very much for that, Dan. Now, before we dive deeper into this subject, Alex Holmes from Oxford Economics joins us to take a look at the social and economic impact from AI. Alex, is this as big as the Industrial Revolution in terms of job displacement?
Thanks, Pamela. Behind me, I have this really fascinating chart. It's based on modeling done by the OECD on what kind of jobs might be open to AI automation. Before we delve into this, it's useful to have a framework in mind of the type of jobs that people do. And you can think of this across two broad dimensions. First, the manual versus the non-manual jobs. And secondly, the creative versus the routine. Up until now, the third quadrant of manual but creative jobs that required a lot of complex skill, for instance, delivery drivers or chefs, they were relatively untouched by AI and automation. But what's really fascinating about this chart, it shows that they may be next in line. Another very interesting thing about this chart is that it delves into the fourth quadrant of people, those who are doing non-manual and creative jobs, things like doctors, lawyers, teachers. If you were to ask me a year ago the kind of job that could never be automated, the kind of thing that really requires intrinsically what it is to be human, I'd have said something like an artist. But as Dan mentioned, ChatGPT-3 can write me a poem. I can write a prompt into Midjourney and it'll paint me a landscape picture. Or I can go on to AIVA and it'll write me a symphony.
So once these jobs are displaced, what do these people do? Do they have to start learning computer code in order to survive?
If you think back 20 years, there's plenty of jobs that you can think of that are now obsolete. And equally, if you think to today, there's plenty of jobs that never existed 20 years ago. Things like social media managers, JavaScript engineers, or even TikTok influencers. And as this chart shows from the World Economic Forum, AI is expected to generate a lot more jobs than it makes obsolete.
And just like the Industrial Revolution, structural unemployment lasted for decades. Can we expect AI to have this same period of instability?
I think there is inevitably going to be an element of structural unemployment, and that really touches on a very tricky topic for both policymakers and society at large. The thing is, while the benefits may be much bigger than the costs of AI, those benefits and costs are distributed differently. Lots of people, almost everyone, benefits a small to moderate amount, whereas the costs, although they may be a lot smaller, can be very concentrated. Think of those professionals who are now completely obsolete in their profession. So it raises that conundrum for policymakers. Do they try and tax AI and redistribute the gains from it, from the winners of AI to the losers of AI? Some say that would stifle innovation in the sector. Or do they let things run their course and risk political instability?
All right, thanks so much, Alex. Now, Dan, coming back to you, some people are referring to AI as the Industrial Revolution 4.0. Which companies are leading this artificial intelligence race?
Yeah, so there's lots of companies across the world. Everybody is chasing AI. You'll see from the chart that there's a number of companies up there that are well-known large technology companies. And up there, we've got a number of Chinese companies as well, and we look at those IP patents. But IP patents isn't necessarily a good measure of AI performance or AI benefit. So what I think is more telling, Pamela, is what we can't see. Which companies are doing this and aren't sharing that? And if you consider the competitive advantage that AI can give those companies, we'd expect there to be hundreds of thousands of them.
And these companies, nearly 50% of these companies, they are Chinese. What's the significance of that sort of participation rate?
I think that's very indicative of the willingness the Chinese government has to invest in this and how much they would like their companies to dominate the world scene, leveraging tools such as AI. So what we'll see as we move forward is companies who can use basic AIs, but in a process which allows them to leverage the outputs of that in the most successful ways, they are the companies who will be dominant. Hence why we're seeing AI embedded into productivity tools that people use every day.
Sure. Now, there's also likely to be a lot of M&A in this sector as well as it matures. And certainly none of these major players will want to see a startup threaten their dominant position.
Yeah, 100%. And we've seen a lot of mergers and acquisitions occur whereby smaller companies have been picked up by larger companies. And we will see that in the next chart. But one of the things I think is key here is that those larger companies aren't buying those smaller startups because they consider them a threat a lot of the time. They're considering them an opportunity, and they're also considering them an opportunity they don't want their peers to have in the market. So we're seeing operational benefits come out of that for those companies who are buying them, and but we're also seeing removal of that opportunity for others in the market.
And on the flip side, AI comes with some pretty big tech heavyweights issuing a warning about ChatGPT in particular. So we have heard Elon Musk and Apple's Steve Wozniak, they've expressed concerns about things moving too fast. What do you make of this?
Yeah, so I think, to be honest with you, I don't want to sit on the fence, but they've all got a bit of a point here. So if you think about the human race in general over the number of years that we've been on the planet, we have done some pretty clever things and some pretty disastrous things. And it's within our nature to push the boundaries of everything within our society. AI as a tool augments us and allows us to achieve more with less. So you can imagine putting that power into the hands of people who don't necessarily want to do the right thing. They could achieve terrible things, but you can also put it into the hands of people who can do amazing things. And we might, for example, find ways to solve our climate crisis.
That would be great. Now, one of the big problems is that ChatGPT so-called, quote-unquote, hallucinates. So what does that mean? And can you explain why this happens?
Yes, so it's not limited to just ChatGPT. This is within AI models in general. But essentially, the model will tell you something with a certain level of confidence, only for you to find out that the data that sits behind that doesn't exist or doesn't support what the AI model has told you. And that occurs because really, when we talk about an AI, we're talking about a computer, and it only works on the information it has to hand. So that is what we would call a hallucination.
And looking into your crystal ball, how do you see the world in 10 years? Explain to us what an AI future looks like.
Yeah, well, one of the most pertinent things I think that will hit everybody from a personal perspective is if you think that GPT has enabled us to interact with everything via text, we're using our natural language to interact with it, then there is no reason why we wouldn't expect that to be embedded into voice assistants within the next 6 months. So your Siri or your Amazon or your Alexa is just going to get better and better. And one of the interesting things about that is it's going to start to hold the history of those conversations, and therefore it provides contextual responses to. So those personal AI assistants that will develop, that were always promised years ago, will now have all the data they need and the ability to understand what you're saying and respond to you in the context of what you're saying. And that will be a really both a valuable and very daunting aspect.
And where would you say is the smart money going right now? What are the biggest areas that stand to benefit from the growth and proliferation of AI?
If I was putting my own money in, which I do, then I focus on those organizations that are in areas which are highly repeatable. So they're doing the same thing a lot of the time. And then we look at those particular organizations and we're focusing on those who've invested in digitization. Because AI feeds off information. So the more information you have available to you, the better the chance are that you'll get those operational gains and those massive leaps in productivity that you're expecting to get from that AI. And as a result of that, those organizations will become far more competitive and should wipe the floor with their peers.
Thank you, Dan. Very insightful conversation indeed. Now, a big thank you to our special guest, Dan Hookham, Global VP Innovation from NRI's Velrada Business, and our resident expert, Alex Holmes from Oxford Economics. Thank you both. Will artificial intelligence set a new world order, or will the machines become sentient and try to establish Skynet like the Terminator films of the 80s? There's a battle for supremacy underway, and it could be a winner-takes-all race. Thanks for tuning in to episode 3 of I See Your Trade. I See Your Trade is brought to you by IC Markets, the leading high-performance trading provider. Trade up to IC Markets. Thanks for joining us today, and we look forward to seeing you next time.